Okay, this is work done with
The stick is there, if you want to point.
Misha Saleh and Jeroen Vink in Amsterdam. This is the program. I have too many transparencies, so somehow we'll have to get through it.
Maybe we skip number four.
Yes. So let's first talk about motivation. We know that the classical approximation can be quite reasonable in the appropriate circumstances, and it nicely incorporates non-perturbative phenomena, skirmions, monopoles, sphalerons, and the question is now, well, we know it's wrong in principle and in practice too, because there are some questions like how to start it up, what are appropriate initial conditions for classical simulations. Suppose you want, we're really in the quantum world, so you want to understand particles coming out of some numerical experiments. So how do you do that? I will be talking about scalar fields, as I said, and I think it is still interesting because as Helmut Satz and Fritjof Kars and Edwin Laumann have stressed at the Marseille meeting, that the chiral dynamics, the transition, QCD transition seems to be triggered by the chiral transition. You sort of still, the confinement transition, it's like you have confinement and still you have the chiral transition. The confinement transition, which you see in pure QCD, is apparently washed out or so. So around the phase transition, it's still, I believe, from their remarks, interesting to just have effective scalar field dynamics, chirals, or 4 model or a sigma model. Now, the classical approximation also breaks down at large times because when the system starts to thermalize in a classical way, and we have the Einstein-Jeans-Rayleigh problem. So we need to connect with the quantum world, and the simplest approximation that does it is the Hartree. And we want inhomogeneous Hartree because we would like to be able to incorporate those objects, those monopoles and skirmions and so. Now, let me review Hartree approximation. So in phi to the 4 theory, which I will be talking about, we have the Heisenberg equations of motion. And then now we take a Gaussian approximation, that's Hartree, another word for Hartree approximation. We have the mean field, say we have the two-point function, which can be written in terms of mean fields and the connected Green function. And the higher order connected Green functions or correlation functions are neglected in this approximation. So lambda phi cubed, the operator goes, if we take an expectation value, to the mean field, phi cubed, and then there is the correlation function coming in at equal space-time positions. Now, you can work at it, and then you get a closed set of equations. One for the mean field, and one for the two-point function. And if you want to understand somehow from other points of view what you have done and neglected, you have neglected, of course, a lot. Nowadays, it's popular to think of phi-derivable approximations. I usually used to think in terms of Schwinger-Dyson equations. It's similar. Basically, you have a functional phi, and you can get approximations by specifying it and how you're going to truncate it. Here are the higher loop diagrams. And what Hartree does, it even throws away mean field type contributions at the two-loop level, and you only keep this diagram in such an approach. Now, it's nice to rewrite the approximation in terms of mode functions. You can write its equivalent In operator language, you can write the operator as a mean field plus a sum over modes with creation, annihilation and creation operators. And they, their occupation number is sort of specifies the initial state. All the time dependencies in the mode functions and in the mean field. And the mode functions then allow you to reconstruct this correlation function. And this is what it is at equal space-time positions. These sets, these two sets of equations, I haven't now written down the equation for the mode function, but the equation for the mode function is similar as that for the green function here, with the right-hand side equal to zero. So then you have an initial value problem. So you need, you have many mode functions, as many as there are spatial points. So it's a quite demanding calculation what we are going to do. Can be anything. Can be anything. But if I specialize my initial mode functions as plane waves, I need a complete set, then that is indeed a label. But it's like the initial specification. And I will always use the label K, but it's not needed, indeed. It can be anything. Now, there is an effective Hamiltonian that you can use, and if you use it to get the Hamilton's equation from that effective classical Hamiltonian, you're back to those Hartree equations. You split the mode function in the real and imaginary parts. You put the initial occupation numbers in them, denoted by xi now. You have a canonical momentum. And in this notation, where xi squared means sum over all mode functions and real and imaginary part, the effective Hamiltonian looks like this. You have a classical pi squared and a gradient phi squared and a phi to the 4 and a mass term, but you also have contribution of the canonical momentum of the mode fields and the and similar terms here. And since it says looks like psi squared, such a combination, you see that you have an On symmetry where N is, well, I called it M. It's O2M symmetry. 2 comes from real and imaginary parts here. And M is the number of mode functions, which would be infinite in the continuum, but if I put it on a lattice with n cubed in three dimensions lattice sides, then I have a huge symmetry, and you have all those conserved angular momenta of the On rotations. So it's a funny approximation. It looks very, from this point of view, it's just a classical set of equations with a huge symmetry group, but they represent then this quantum approximation called Hartree. Sorry? The symmetry will be gone.
Right, but you said on the previous transparency you're not including that.
That's right, I'm not including. That's right, yeah. Yes. It is sort of more than just a correction. You see, it's sort of self-coupled even, and it acts back on the mean field. And but they're all classical equations. There's no memory in time. That's
all he's saying is there's a loop.
There is a loop, but from this point of view, it looks very classical. You see. I know, but if you want to be a devil's advocate, that's what. No, I like this point of view that it's really very classical, and you could use the classical approximation, classical dynamics, and do a Hartree approximation on that, with similar brackets, classical sort of brackets over initial condition, and then you get the same Hartree equations So in that sense, it's similar. And
I think the dynamic is classical, that the quantum effects are built into the initial condition. Yeah, yeah. Basically, you have an uncertainty relation that prevents you from shrinking the width of your yeah. Otherwise, it's possible.
Yeah, but
there is a specific term, but that is already the phi cube. When you write phi cube, and then you phi cube, that's a classical.
Right. You see, look at put that slide back. There's a
which the width which is not what we call classical, yeah. Yeah. Which is without rotation.
There's a width right. Which depends on the n, the occupation number. That you can think of as quantum. There's a high temperature limit. It's classical occupation. Look at that ck. There's an nk in the square root. Is also 1/2.
What you're saying is it's classical statistical mechanics, not classical field theory. Yeah. Not classical equations of motion of a single elemental coefficient.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's a classical ensemble.
Well,
it's an ensemble that involves all the classical.
Yes, with quantum initial conditions.
I would like to postpone. I mean, this. Yeah, but.
In that sense, in the initial condition.
The equations of motion look the same for the classical theory. It's only in the initial condition.
It's been said. Okay, that is exactly the situation. Now, let me review the stationary states. You can look for time-independent states where the mean field is constant and the modes are just plain waves with some frequency. This correlation function then looks like that. And the Hartree equation then tells you, gives a sort of self-consistent equation for the frequency. Because it looks like, you know, k squared plus m squared, but what is this m? This m comes out like that, and this m also appears again in this omega. So you get sort of a nonlinear complicated equation, but you could solve it, and it's not so difficult. There are two phases, a symmetric and a broken phase. For any, basically, nk, these equations hold. Now, if you use vacuum, if you think of the vacuum, then you wouldn't have any occupation numbers there. And now you have to think of making things finite and renormalize. And in 1 plus 1 dimension, there's just a mass renormalization which you can use to renormalize the equations. In 3 plus 1, it's not so nice. Mass renormalization and coupling renormalization don't do the job. You really need to sort of subtract the thing and make it finite. And the reason is that there is this different coefficient in the two equations. You have 3 lambda c, but there's 1 lambda here and 3 lambdas here. And so a coupling renormalization works out differently in the two equations. In the large n limit, which Daniel has done a lot, this 3 gets replaced by 1, and then you can really renormalize the things consistently with mass and coupling. But with Hartree, this cannot be done. But in 1 plus 1, it can be done. So there are some not so nice features, another not so nice feature is that you get a first order transition if you put in a thermal occupation number in the time independent state, the stationary state.
First order phase transition as a function of
temperature.
From what to what? Just from symmetry broken to symmetry restored.
Naively, yeah. Symmetry is always restored by kinks
In
the infinite volume limit. But if you have a finite volume, you see a very clear transition. And also in these equations, you don't see kinks. So you have a very clear transition. It's a first-order transition. And it should be a crossover or second-order in higher orders and so. So
this is one scalar field, one dimension.
Yeah, real scalar field. So those effects, these first order effects, I think are small if the coupling is small, but they won't be if the coupling is not small. So all these things can be improved just at the one loop level by including this diagram, that one. Then I think also Goldstone theorem would be satisfied, and you would have the right order for the phase transition. But this diagram generates sort of a memory kernel in your equation of motion, and then things become, well, infinitely more complicated in practice, finitely, but very more complicated numerically. So that's it. So it's a bit depressing that it gets quickly very complicated. Anyhow, with this approximation, we can do something. Now, so the question now is, does this make any sense, this Bose-Einstein distribution? What happens if we have an arbitrary initial state? Does it then thermalize to that form, approximately? I mean, thermalization, you have a closed system, so you need some sort of coarse graining, and then define your coarse grain variables, occupation numbers, and so, and then you can think of, does it approach that form, yes or no, in time. And then it's not obvious, because as we just discussed, this equation looks very classical. So first we need a definition of this particle number, and here is one that I like very much. It is, you look at the two-point functions connected for the phi derivative in time and phi, and average over the volume, the same y here, and then take the Fourier transform with respect to the difference, one I call S and the other U, and if you then had a free field or you had very weak coupling, then these S and U would look like this. You have an occupation number and a frequency coming out. So we define now the frequency in this way. I did it the wrong way around, I see. Exactly the wrong. So this is omega squared, and this is nk plus a half. Also out of equilibrium for each time. In principle, they are, yeah, if I do it at each time. I can do more averaging even over a finite time interval. Microcanonical, you can do various brackets there, indeed. But if I want it sharply at each time, it's just the initial state averaging.
Yeah, if you're doing microcanonical, there shouldn't be a T in there.
Yeah. Well, you can have coarse graining in time. You would like to follow the time dependence. Microcanonical is averaging over infinite time, essentially.
What I meant is just assuming that you're in equilibrium, you could take the averages just by averaging
right.
over long.
I could wait a long time till it has.
Right, but cancel that because you're trying to study your approach to equilibrium.
Now, one thing that has been studied a lot in this approximation is, for instance, a spinodal instability where the system is homogeneous. You start on top of the hill and let the scalar field roll down, you would think, but it doesn't roll because, you know, symmetry tells you when phi, the mean field, is zero at the beginning, it stays at the end zero too, but of course the fluctuations grow, and you can model that by having only a time dependence but with plane waves for the x dependence. And what comes out is some distribution, but it doesn't look like a thermal one, right? For large times, nothing much happens. You get something here, and it sort of stops much earlier. It's not a 1 over t exponential tail, a Boltzmann tail or something like that. So, and that is because there's not sufficient scattering. We don't have the scattering. We need to go to two loops to have the scattering in, and suppose Jürgen will talk to us about that. But what I find worrying too is that you have seemed to sort of lost the intuition that the classical approximation gives you. Classically, we think in terms of realizations, and the scalar field would always be a little bit, you know, fluctuating, and small fluctuation will make it fall off the hill and falling into its minimum. And then in space, you will have various Weissgebiete, how do you say this in English? Various regions where you have the order field in various directions. And that's what we would like to come out, and that's what you see classically very nicely. Although if I would start classically exactly homogeneous, you have the same problem, but then you would put in the fluctuation. Now how do we put here in the fluctuation? Because we are always stuck with these quantum brackets, and if our ensemble is homogeneous, quantum mechanically, then this is it. It doesn't, Hartree, homogeneous Hartree doesn't reproduce your intuition or what should be coming out. So we would like to have something of an initial state that is like a classical realization for the Hartree approximation to get closer to our classical intuition. And the mean field is then sort of identified with an inhomogeneous classical field. Now there is one way to do that. If you look at coherent states, if I have 1 degree of freedom, I have a complex number z in terms of a p and a q and a p and an omega. The annihilation operator then on a coherent state parameterized by this P and Q is then an eigenstate. This eigenvalue is this complex number Z. And the it looks like any density operator can be expanded in terms of those coherent states, diagonal coherent states. It's a very non-trivial formula. And this formula, formally you can obtain this rho by Fourier transformation given your quantum rho. So the sort of this superposition rho is determined in terms of the quantum rho by Fourier transformation, but this Fourier transform is very singular sometimes. It's a horrible distribution, not even a normal tempered distribution of something. It's usually doesn't work out, but if you have a nice rho, like a temperature Gaussian rho at finite temperature, then the formula gives you this expansion coefficient here as a sort of Bose-Einstein form. This is the inverse Bose-Einstein distribution appearing and something like classical Hamiltonian there. Now, what this means is that if you have a quantum rho, which has mean field zero, I'm not talking the language of fields because you can, of course, apply this to every field mode, then you can still rewrite it as a superposition where you have non-zero value of your mean field in every member of this ensemble specified this P and Q. So you can write a two-point function with zero mean field as, say, a vacuum two-point function, ground state two-point function, but with mean fields where you average. And this is the average, what you then do. And this leads into a Hartree ensemble approximation. You take these kinds of initial states and then apply your Hartree approximation to them. And typically these, now in field language, such realizations in quotes are inhomogeneous. And then it seems like an appropriate way to think of, to recover this intuitive idea which you didn't have with the homogeneous Hartree approximation of classical dynamics in classical fields. Now you can then, because you have a mean field, You have also that the modes can scatter on the mean field and vice versa. I have a sheet of that here, but I would like to skip it. It's an intuitive thing. Also in classical dynamics, in classical electrodynamics, you could have sort of particles scattering on the classical mean field and back. So there might be an improved thermalization. So that was what we would wanted to do, is test this. This is sort of where we got stuck 3 years ago, and now we have some results. And so does it make sense, these ideas? So we take some initial state out of equilibrium, and then want to see if these occupation numbers that I defined at each time approach the Bose-Einstein distribution. Now, there's a caveat, because as I said, it's just classical dynamics with some effective Hamiltonian, and then wouldn't you get classical equipartition after a long time? This is what you would expect, modulo those conserved quantities. So what comes out then at large times, I have done my best to find it analytically, but I haven't been able to, unfortunately. The problem is really too complicated. But you can test it numerically. So we are going to be on the space-time lattice with n spatial sites in 1+1 dimension. The tests will all be done in one spatial dimension. And you have a spatial volume, periodic boundary conditions. And we'll start, say, in the broken phase, where the mean field, the vacuum mean field, would then be V, constant V. And I've put in parentheses that, I mean, it's called broken phase, but if they're really kinks, then the kinks would wash out even this V if you have an infinite volume. So you wouldn't expect that. But the question is, do these equations reproduce that aspect, yes or no, as well? If I have time, I'll come back to that later. No, those are the ones I defined in this little sheet here at each time. Right. We have checked if this makes sense also, if this quasi-particle picture makes sense, and because you can check it at in imaginary time. You can go to equilibrium and see if those things make sense, and yeah. The answer is yes, if the coupling is weak enough. It's very quickly makes sense. I mean, you have to have really strong coupling if you see deviations, say, of sort of freak particle behavior in these omegas that I defined. It's, of course, you can always find deviations, but in practice it seems to work very well. Yeah.
We started with the particular mode of cycles and then the person was the formula. So what is the connection? So here you have momentum, the field theory is mechanics.
Well, it is mechanics. We are on the lattice, so it's even mechanics. It's just mechanics. But we hope that it approximates field theory, and that can be controlled. So the continuum behavior can be controlled by being near a continuum limit. Parisi has not so long ago studied this 4 or 5 years ago, and now much more in detail is Gerd Aerts and people from Heidelberg, the classical approximation. The thermalization works, as far as I understand their papers, and no, I agree. But it can take a long time on those linear in one dimension.
Yes. In addition to it, coming back to Lulam, that we are looking at an integral system, and there is not a manifestation because it has many conservation losses in this screen.
Okay, so.
The answer in that case is very, very material because in different places and space. stable motion, another place with chaotic motion, so it's just fluid. So it's not general performance normalization, it's one initial condition is not in another way.
Okay, let's look at the initial condition. The first ones we took, I mean, everyone comes to this, but we call them Parisi initial condition because he was the first to publish this thing. We discovered later. You take plane waves. So basically, you take the field in its vacuum and the momentum in it in a sort of plane wave where you average over phases. You have a flat distribution over the phases of these plane waves. You take a number of lattice momenta, finite volume momenta. We took like that much. So K max in physical units, in M mass units, is pi over 4. And then the thing is really specified by this coefficient A here, which you can choose in such a way that, for instance, the energy density is something. And initially, it's in the mean field.
These pi's are the pi's of the mean field.
The phi dots, yeah.
So they're so you're starting with an inhomogeneous time derivative of the mean field.
That's right.
And now you're going to see how that goes
right
into the fluctuation mode.
The modes are in the vacuum, and those occupation numbers, those initial occupation numbers, are all zero.
Yeah.
And that is one of those coherent states, really, what you can think of it that way. When the initial occupation numbers are zero and you have a mean field, then it's really
it
can be a
Gauss. The mean field is actually doing something instead of just being homogeneous.
That's right. All the inhomogeneity is in these waves here. Now, both Einstein thermalization with this energy density would give T over M 1.1 about. We're in a finite volume, 32 m times the volume. The coupling, we think this of this as weak coupling. This is the cutoff, and this is number of lattice sites. So if I have a free field at finite temperature with the Bose-Einstein distribution, and I wanted to have an energy density of 0.5 in these units, then the temperature would be 1.1.
What about Rayleigh-Jeans thermalization?
I haven't even tried. Well, basically, the temperature is always zero because you have an infinite number of modes in the continuum limit.
An ultraviolet cutoff, so it won't be zero. It'll be some small number.
Yeah, but we want to be in the regime where we have continuum behavior. So in that limit, there must be a sufficient number of lattice sites that you really have continuum behavior.
Right, exactly.
Then the temperature would be zero.
It would be much smaller than your 1.1 anyway.
Yeah, it would be, in my approximation, which is continuum approximation, it would be zero. Now, there are lots of results. So first we see that the energy goes from the mean field to the modes. Yeah. So here, there's lots of things. This is this effective potential you get from Hartree. It's the first order phase transition. You forget about that. So the modes energy grows. The mean field energy goes down very slowly. This is 0.1, and the total is 0.5. So these are large times, 20,000 in mass units. So things don't move very fast. Then you can, I'll show you quickly a set of plots. Here is the occupation number as I defined it at early times as a function of K. And here is a function of this omega that I also found from these equations. And so you start sort of with this flat ensemble, and quickly at time 42 it looks already like a Bose-Einstein distribution, and at much larger times, like 1,000, the curve would be the Bose-Einstein with this inverse temperature, and you need a chemical potential. Now, why do we need a chemical potential? Well, if you have sort of 2-to-2 scattering, then it conserves particle number in these equations. Well, in general, it's as if you have a conserved quantity and then you produce a chemical potential. It's 2 to 4 or higher order scattering that then gives you chemical equilibration, but that's a much slower process. So you may have temporarily a chemical potential appearing, which ideally should go to zero again if you have perfect thermalization, but that may be a later happening. Now, you can plot things in this plot that we often use. If you have a Bose-Einstein distribution, then if you plot log 1 plus 1 over n, you would get a straight line as a function of omega. So I will show a few plots of that here now. This is where you plot the occupation number you get out of the modes only, and this is modes plus mean field, because you have, that's the real thing, I would say, because that's the real average. But you can look separately at the modes. And you see the modes approaching some sort of, this would be the straight line of Bose-Einstein, and initially it has that, and then the occupation number, since this goes up, means that n goes down. The classical would look like a curve that look curved here. And we'll see evidence of that also. Here? Yeah, just draw a line by eye to these data. You get the mu because it doesn't intersect at zero, and you get the slope, that's the beta. So you see sort of a linear regime. It's quite dirty starting at early, we call this early time because of these are very late times already if you think of in mass units. And at very late times, it sort of seems to approach this straight line more and more, and mu goes to zero now. And so here now we're at time 80,000, the last one. So if you record the temperature from a fit, then the temperature sort of goes roughly, at the average is indeed 1.1, like Bose-Einstein, and the chemical potential that appeared early sort of seems to go to zero here, and here we get things sort of going away, and basically what you also see, I mean, this is a log plot, so you see, I mean, it looks sort of not so, you have deviations and they're substantial. So we believe that, as I said, the classical distribution would be curved like that. This is evidence for classicality coming in. And but if you now want to really see this equipartition according to the effective Hamiltonian, that's very hard. We couldn't find it this way. So we started again. And with this ensemble here. Now it starts at 1 here. Now it's a function of k. So it's n times omega is plotted as a function of k. So if you have classical behavior, then n times omega would just be the temperature. It would be because n would go like 1 over omega. So if the thing gets flat, this curve turns into flat, then classical behavior would have come out. And we have to go like to millions in mass units time millions, and then we see it sort of coming out, but it's still not really there, and it doesn't move anymore. So that's much, much later time scale. That's sort of the message that you get out of this. Extremely slowly.
But even at a million time scale.
No, it's there. If it hasn't reached it, then it's still going, and it needs to reach it, and it really needs, you need equipartition, even
so
for the higher
really
mode.
Catastrophe is a very slow catastrophe.
With Hartree, yes. It's also slow, actually it's also slow classic, purely classical, I mean, as Fritjof knows, and so. Millions instead of thousands, yeah. Huge. I write here. Now, there's also a damping. You can study damping. You take the mean field, take its autocorrelation in time, and see if you have some sort of damping. Doesn't make sense. Now, I have used here one initial condition. There's two different volumes here, two different situations. And on a log plot, you plot the autocorrelation function as a function of time. It's a log, so it's, when things go to zero, things go to minus infinity. And you see sort of wavy behavior. And it, yeah, unequal time autocorrelation function. Yeah, we just oscillate. Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And this is a microcanonical average, because we have one initial condition, from 30,000 to 60,000, say, in time units average. Usually these things are very difficult. You need high statistics. And now you can then try to do an analytic calculation, say, with putting in the setting sun diagram and see if you get damping. And you get an answer. Well, first of all, you see that it's a non-trivial problem. It's much more difficult in 1 plus 1 than in 3 plus 1. It's not so clear cut, and there's what I call a twin peaks phenomena. But I won't, it's in the proceedings of Marseille, I think. I don't want to talk about it. But that explains those wiggles. So you also find this analytically, although more analytically, it's not so easy to do. So using Mathematica, I never came beyond the first dip. But then you get the damping rate under those conditions, which is roughly within a factor of 2 of what is here. So it's wrong, but it's not terribly wrong. It's also a little bit right. It's sort of nice that you see damping in this situation. Here? Yeah, but it is here. This is Hartree, yes. And it is there, in inhomogeneous Hartree.
So there is some damping.
Yeah.
It's just a coincidence that it happens to the damping rate that you express in ballpark, the same order as the present damping.
Yeah.
It's a coincidence.
Well, I have this. Yeah, I have no good explanation for it, but thinking of scattering on the mean field, and so what else could it be? Now I don't have I can only do an analytic calculation with a homogeneous situation, and then I get as you say, there's no real damping in the symmetric phase. There's no damping at all. In the broken phase, there's some damping, but it's of a different nature, different kind. So. But this is like the plasmon damping. It's close, I mean, it's within a factor of 2, indeed. It's quite, yeah, striking. Now, there is a collinear divergence in 1 plus 1 dimension. There's all sorts of funny things happening, and you have to deal with that analytically, too. Okay, now I want to say a few things about these Bose-Einstein initial conditions. Then we take this distribution for every mode with the Bose-Einstein factor coming in with T0 is the initial temperature. And so now this is all in the mean field. The modes are in their vacuum, but now the energy goes from the mean field to the modes, and then you end up with some sort of thermalization phenomena. So here is plotted, I think, the contribution to the modes only. And you see them, actually, I don't know if it's modes only. But the system is still out of equilibrium because, it is not. The Bose-Einstein initial condition would be perfect for a free field, but it isn't a free field. We have interaction. So it's out of equilibrium because of that. And also the finite temperature mass that would be generated is wrong. So that's changing. And we can monitor that to find sort of time scales. But here you see we start initially with a sort of straight line up. So you're much closer to Bose-Einstein and you stay with that. The slope is changing, temperature is changing. At larger times, you see deviations popping up, and at very large time, 11,000 here, you see here, this is the classical distribution, and you see really classical contamination. And we used a stronger coupling than in the previous case to be able to see it, otherwise you would have to wait too long again to find it. Now, we also did things that at a much higher temperature, then things go quicker. And here's a really strong classical contamination. But at times, say, for 4,000, it still looks pretty much Bose-Einstein. But it has equilibrated and so on. But at much later time, this classical equipartition gets in at 22,000. So you see it very clearly. Now we couldn't with the previous initial condition, but now we really can get the time scales. Of course, we have a better look on it. And so the Bose-Einstein temperature would go like this on this time scale. And the classical contamination comes on this time scale in. And the temperature sort of is different. It's a different process. But from the exponential fits, we get the time scale. And what you get out of it is that the time scale for Bose-Einstein thermalization compared to classical contamination, it's roughly a factor of 100. So this time scale is 100 times bigger than that time scale. So
and this temperature is lower, but it's only lower by a factor of.
If you would want to do quantum physics, you wouldn't be in this regime. You want to avoid it. So you want to be on a time scale where you have this, don't have this contamination yet. It's there because it's starting right away, but it builds up much slower, a factor of 100. And we did this for several couplings and energy densities, and we don't understand why it is 100, but you know, it is 100. Now, I have data. Somehow, this classical contamination, it needs the mean field and the modes to be sort of on equal footing, because that's what the effective Hamiltonian says. You have a mean field, you have modes, who tells you who is who? You just have some different couplings. And this equipartition, you have so many modes and one mean field, and there's so, it might come from that, just this factor of 100, you have like 100 more modes or. You wouldn't reach it, no. We don't know enough about it yet. I'm sure. Here we put Bose-Einstein initial condition in it, and
so more suggestively, we plot something that starts with a positive curvature, it's closed.
Yes.
You have to end up with something with a negative curvature.
Right.
I'm very much surprised that in between it's open as much.
That is true. That is true, but you see, so those Parisi initial conditions are, in that sense, more suggestive, I would say, because we do see sort of a long kind of flat region there. And you didn't start with both ends, and it seems to develop. So that made us feel that it's not, I don't know, it's better than what you said, but I Now I have things about the symmetric phase, and I will skip it because time is going. Basically, things move much, much slower there. You need much bigger couplings. You need higher energy densities to see similar effects. And in the beginning, we didn't see this effect at all. And there was a paper by Betancourt and co-workers that said, well, we don't see anything of this thermalization. And here is, for instance, a plot that we had. It doesn't look very much like, what does it look like? It just stays like that. But in other occasions, we have reproduced thermalization even in the symmetric phase, but it is much more difficult. And our answer to this paper of Betancourt et al. Is that they had a much too low energy density. So their time scales for thermalization would be huge. I mean, thousands more than I've described here. That I have plots about it, but I want to skip it. Okay, now let me say something more about kinks now, because it's sort of fun. And I don't know, maybe there's something in it. So, a kink at rest would be this classical field configuration. And we can now use it as an initial condition for our Hartree simulations. So that's really what I wanted. I wanted to be able to deal in the quantum theory with kinks. And therefore need an inhomogeneous Hartree approximation. Now, at rest, the classical kink is just a solution, so it stays there, but in a periodic boundary condition, you can have only kink anti-kink, so even that configuration would be unstable. But for Hartree, it's not the solution of the equation of motion, because the equation for the modes sees the inhomogeneous behavior of the mean field, and the modes, if you start with plane waves, that doesn't make sense. We start with the modes in the vacuum, put the mean field as a kink, then it's not an equilibrium configuration. So what will come out? The things will start to breeze and oscillate a bit. And now here you see a comparison between classical and Hartree at what we think is a strong coupling. Usually had a factor 12 here. Now we have 1.25 to enhance the effects. This is classical, kink and anti-kink. And they attract because it's periodic. And in this way, they happen, unfortunately, not to go, well, they go around to the back. And then they annihilate. And they were at zero relative speed. And this is the Hartree at this strong coupling. And the thing sort of splits up. It's not at all very nice. It's this is the energy density contours plotted as a function of x, position, and time. And I just looked at it. Misha has a thing, an animation on the web. And it's very hard to see this. In the mean field, you can be fooled. It looks OK. But if you look at the energy density, you see immediately there's something wrong here.
There's four lumps there instead of two.
Right. It splits up. One. Yeah, it splits up. It's not. It's not.
Yeah, what does it look like?
It just looks like two bumps, indeed, at a certain. Wait a minute. That's the energy density. No, you can't see it.
But if you just look at them, if you just look at the mean field, does it still look like kink anti-kink?
Yeah.
So one of those bumps is.
It's sort of the slope is different, and the modes are acquiring stuff. I don't want to. I just skipped it on purpose. It's less clear.
Kink is linking phase 2 pi, right?
1 pi. 1 pi.
It's not the sine Gordon. There's no pi. What's the pi?
It goes from minus 1 to 1.
So what is the kink?
It goes from minus b to b.
Yeah, a kink anti kink goes like that.
So, but if I look at the mean field, you know, I would say, so at the top it goes from minus b to b to minus b.
Yeah.
Can you tell me where is it minus b and where is it b at time, I don't know, 4?
I can't because I just looked at it because this just for this talk, and I couldn't see this behavior. Anyhow, it's bad. So if we take weaker coupling, a 12 here, like we did in the previous simulations, and then you see the kink, the Hartree, kink, anti-kink, reasonably stable. Now this is times 1,000, and then the annihilate. So we can use this if on this time scale. If we want to do study things on a smaller time scale, we can use this coupling. So the now what you can also do is try to get a better kink approximation in the quantum theory. And we tried that.
Find
a stable kink with anti-periodic boundary condition, like putting it in the Hartree equation and putting some friction in the mean field, sort of to suck energy out of it, cool it. It works, but then you get this philosophical question, what is a quantum kink? Because a quantum kink in infinite volume, you have the quantum brackets, the mean field will be just zero. It's very strange. Because you have this translational zero mode, it doesn't know where to be. And if you just wait a long time, so if you start it like this, and after a long time, it sort of very slowly goes through zero, and then if you wait even longer, it you don't see it anymore. So the kink sort of goes into the... this is typically for discussion. I don't want to deal with it. But you can get a mass that way. And it is... the effects are not so big. The cooled mass, so the approximation to the quantum theory, there's also, of course, an analytic formula, but that is... that is more than Hartree, it includes more diagrams. But this is sort of the accuracy which of the quantum effect.
This kind of thing is something, not what you talked about a minute ago, but the finding the stable, static quantum kink is something which Bob Jaffe and Eddie Farhi and their large collaboration have been doing.
Yeah.
And they have some very nice results. I wonder what... I can't remember which one-dimensional theory they were doing.
They had fermions.
They've done both. They've done scalars and fermions.
Okay, you can do it. You get the mass, but the shape of your mean field won't look like a kink. It's because you have this. If you have a big volume, it doesn't know where to be, and it's sort of. Okay. Okay. If you don't, then you still get the energy correct, but you can't find it by looking. It doesn't look like it.
Okay.
Right. Now we are looking at collisions. So we have two positions, x1 and x2, kink, anti-kink, with relative velocity u. And gamma is the Lorentz gamma factor corresponding to that velocity. And then we want to see what's coming out. It's sort of fun. So first classical. There's a critical velocity. If you go above it, then the kinks don't annihilate anymore, but they just bounce. So here we are near the critical velocity. This is velocity 0.21, 0.25, and 0.3, and here they bounce, and here sort of they don't know what to do. The critical velocity is near 0.25, classically. Now, with Hartree, you have also particles. Okay, if you have the quantum modes, and so somehow it's much more unstable, and you need a much bigger velocity. The critical velocity is much bigger. It's more like 0.75. Here's the Hartree kink, anti-kink coming together, and they still annihilate. Here you are at 0.75, and here at 0.8 above it.
If you look at the top picture, so they've annihilated from some sort of a breeder. Is dissipating away only very slowly. Why is that not spreading? Why are the decay products not spreading?
They attract, and of course you have a non-zero mass. So you cannot just radiate particles because each particle has its mass. They cannot be radiated if you don't have enough energy. So if you're too close to your, the velocity is not big enough, you cannot radiate. I think. So this is a gamma of like 1. Now you go to bigger gammas, and then you have, it's a heavy iron collision in the sense that a kink is like a nucleon. It's like the skirmion, and here they collide, and you have something in between. You get stuff produced here in this region here. This is gamma 10. There's a gamma 20. And now, because of the time delay, you see the times here are very small. It's more like we're used to in heavy iron collisions. You can use a strong coupling. It doesn't really matter because it's stable enough. Now, what else is there? We can plot the in this region. We can plot the energy density as a function of, well, a certain time. And then in the central region, you get some plateau. Doesn't depend much on coupling if you rescale the energy. Doesn't depend much on the velocity at given, well, coupling. And there's a little difference, it seems. This is still preliminary. We haven't written the paper yet. We are going to write it. That's the idea. But so here you cannot see the difference between Hartree and classical. But there's a factor of 2, roughly, hidden in the plot. It's a log plot now. And what strikes you is that the central energy density is not very big. It's like 0.1 in mass units. But of course, it has dimension mass squared and not mass to the 4 like in 3 plus 1D. So I don't know. I basically would like somebody to tell me what it means. Who? I know they did, but have they written it up or have they?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Oh, they have the scaling law they tested. Yeah, that I've seen, yeah. Yeah. Now here you see a more refined plot on a linear scale, the energy density versus time now in the central region at x equals 0. And this is Hartree. This is the total energy density, including those lumps where the kinks move away. And this is the Hartree, and this is the classical. The classical seems to go below, and the Hartree has higher energy density. And I think it is because they have particle creation. You have more. The quantum particles, being the modes, are there, so it's more the real thing. To see how the classical decays here, on a log plot, it looks like you have 2 slopes. One time it goes like 1 over time cubed, and this is 1 over the time. I don't, again, not what it means. So let's. I also have something about kinks at finite temperature that has to do with what is a kink in the quantum theory. I'll skip that too, and go to the conclusion. So what have we learned? I think we had a glimpse of non-perturbative quantum field dynamics. And the basic question is, do you need these inhomogeneous aspects to be able to discuss kinks, skirmions, and so on? Or can you also find them on an average in your quantum brackets in a completely homogeneous formalism? If I do Schwinger-Dyson, phi derivable, homogeneously, it's much more simple. I can always use Fourier space and do a yes or no get the kinks in that formalism. You say yes?
No.
I don't know. So I thought that's why I need this inhomogeneity. I want to see them, but then if you try to see them in the quantum world, that is hard because you have to be careful how to do it. And this is still bugging me, this question. The numerical effort was quite is big. It goes, since you have in D dimensions, spatial dimensions, it goes like n to the 2D plus 1. The 1 comes from, if you want to make the spatial lattice spacing go to 0, then the time lattice spacing also has to go to 0. That gives the extra 1 here. And the 2 here is because you have, you know, the number of modes is the number of lattice sites in space. Now you can limit the number of modes, we tried this in 3 plus 1, and you can get somewhere by saying, you know, I only take modes that are roughly of the order of the temperature, twice the temperature maybe, if there would be a temperature, and but much lower than the cutoff, because we have some feeling now for how important that effect would be. You could do above that number of modes, you could do it, just take plane waves analytically, and I think that could be done, but then you get a big constant, but scaling like, well, more favorable. It's still a big effort. It's the effort really is similar to dynamical fermion calculations in QCD. So it doesn't really look very nice to to continue, but I think what we learned is one aspect that I like to have learned is the following, that it shed new light on the initial conditions. You can use those Bose-Einstein initial conditions with those Gaussian coherent states for the classical approximation. And then if your time scales are such that classical, that thermalization, sort of quick thermalization happens is enough, and this equipartition sets on a much larger time scale, this contamination, then you can have, you're much closer to the real thing than if you would start with a classical Boltzmann equilibrated ensemble. Suppose you want to do a heavy iron collision thing and you want to look for, I don't know, skirmions coming out, go through the transition. The expansion also it's a very small time scale. Here we had thousands of mass units of time scale. In heavy iron collision, you tens. You only need tens. So all those classical contaminations and even the Hartree aspects could be suppressed on that time scale. So this is what I find a very hopeful teaching from these tests. Thank you. That's what we call the Hartree ensemble approximation.
Yes, it's perfectly right. At the end, you can perfectly describe with this method the homogeneous ensemble. It's just that the intermediate step of doing your Hartree approximation is very different as if you would do your Hartree approximation for homogeneous initial conditions at the beginning.
Well, your final answer is also very different. That is the point. Yeah. Yes.
In the true world, of course, if you would believe that, it would not be different because you can just compose arbitrarily in the numbers you would have on some of them together again. It's just a question of the approximation.
Yes.
And that brings me now to the second point. I mean, but I really would like to know how well this approximation works. And in this case, there are many explanations of the paper. They have been done. But since you can easily construct a homogeneous ensemble that's superposed
You mean stationary? Yes. Not non-equilibrium. For the classical approach. No, but the results are very different.
Yeah, but then the question is that, you have the equation.
Yes.
The classical system can do a half the approximation. Exactly the same half the approximation that we are using.
Yes.
Now, the question is, to what extent are the phenomena artifacts of the half the approximation based in a very cool way, or to what extent are
well, I have compared, but you don't see this approximate Bose-Einstein thermalization in the classical simulations. I would put it this way: it's certainly not good enough, Hartree. But I think you have put the system into the quantum world. So you have renormalization, you don't have the Rayleigh genes divergence. Everything is in that sense finite. Whereas in the classical simulation you do have that. So it's more than I believe what you just said. But we have to improve. Now we can put in this extra diagram at the same number of loops. That's one thing. Put in the memory kernel. That might be interesting, and I think it could be tested in 1+1 dimension. Then we're much more on the way of things what Jürgen has been doing. We have a memory in time, memory kernel, but basically that's not, it's a bit frustrating. It gets even more frustrating if it's numerically so complicated. I would like more to go this way, go back to classical with what we have learned here we don't have this Rayleigh genes divergence in this way, and it will never show up because the timescale where it would show up, those problems are way beyond the timescale we are interested in. And so we don't initialize with Bose. I think that's the message. You don't want to initialize with Bose Einstein. You want to, sorry, with Boltzmann, but with Bose Einstein. Yeah, that's what I'm advocating. But it's put exactly. But it's put into. I mean, this is what it has taught us. It has those considerations with the decomposition with Gaussian coherent states. It's all quantum analysis, I would say, or quantum deliberation. And knowing that, having seen what it does in the Hartree, we can now go back to classical and we understand more what it would mean. If you would just straight away do this kind of thing, you have to put it in a framework. You have to put it in a quantum framework. We saw that also in classical simulation.
Kind of random fields like Bradshaw, Gopal, and company who do some also classical young fields with some random.
They also have
Bose-Einstein, although from scattering to scattering starts again releasing more than time. So this is maybe
I skipped this. I saw the same phenomena, but we skipped it. But what we also found is that the transition to classical this Rayleigh gene style behavior was factor order 10 faster than with Hartree. So and that's also basically an answer to Christoph's remark. That's true what you're saying. Yeah.
Is about the first part, that you want to separate mode from nucleus, etc. In many body theory, like you know, liquid theory, etc., people were also fighting with it. And then when this bosons and condensation and trap appear, it is also around the 5^4.
Yeah.
Then everything becomes very beautiful because you have a new field, it's localized, and then you have modes that are external clouds that fly around, they have different spatial distribution. They do interact with each other, they randomize each other, you can calculate the diagrams, etc. The phenomenon that one goes into another. In completely cool system, you can have what ideally also described as you have a new field of particular shape, you just let it go.
You trap it and then it
you
stays.
You trap it, you repulse it.
Right.
And it's also a mean field. It's basically the same
approximation.
And it has a particular shape. It keeps it off. It's flying away.
Right.
And you can see by your own eyes, because by making, first of the suggestion is if you put in your Lagrangian external field,
a trap. Yeah.
Yes. Then it's separating nucleus from particles because particles the world is on the same scale. You love to play with your system. You love to
play with your
force. I've seen all of your hands. The part was
so that was the question. I was really small clarification about the nature of this method. So basically, you have two couple of equations of mass. One for the and what people say is at least in a classical point of view, it's arbitrary how you separate the initial
In Hartree, the equations are different, but in large end, they would be identical.
But the question is whether, if you take the limit where initially the 2-point function of this, you have a field equation for the
yes.
It's coupled to the 2-point function.
Yes.
With the 2-point function is zero, I guess that's the classical.
Yes.
And if 2-point function is initially zero, does it remain?
No, because it gets influenced. If the mean field is homogeneous and static, yes, then nothing happens. But if the mean field is inhomogeneous, then the 2-point function will. Right.
Turn it off. Turn off the 2-point.
No, you can put in the quantum, but the quantum fluctuations would be just like a mass renormalization. So, then nothing would happen.
Classical on one projector, one field, not even any realization.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but then you're not in the quantum world.
Yeah.
That's
and then the opposite limit is where you take this mean field to be zero, and you only have quantum functions. That's ordinary hard.
Yes.
So basically, you have now a continuum of, you can do the separation through the quantum, but the continuum of different ways. You can either
that was what I was showing.
Then you can have anything in between. So, I mean, you can have.
Now, writing the density matrix as a superposition is what I was shown.
So basically, you can have any result between the Kostikar result or the Hartree result.
I would not want to throw away the quantum fluctuations. I mean, they're always there. They are the initial. They specify the initial condition for the mode function.
No, we just take point of view that the truth of the question, but you can sort of do this in separation between the mode function and the example of the mean field in arbitrary way. Then you can have any behavior you want.
I don't know about the any behavior you want.
I mean, you can...
I don't know what you want to...
a continuum of different behaviors from Hartree to the
So here we have two possibilities. Either we put the thing in the mean field and average over it, here, for instance, like that, and you write a two-point function as a mean field average, or you set it to its quantum distribution, whatever, and put the mean field to zero. That's what you want to say.
Yeah. Then you can have either purely Hartree.
I see it as all being Hartree.
So much linear. You can do that.
Yeah.
Or you can do purely classical. Or you can do anything.
If you do purely Hartree, what you call purely Hartree, then nothing would happen. There would be no interesting thing because.
Yes. And then you can do purely classical and you get the classical. And you can do anything in between.
It's a way of looking at it. I don't entirely agree with the way of looking that Christoph looks at it. What you want to say, I'm not totally sure if I understand you correctly.
Any other pressing questions?
I think we do try to find conception about the ghetto of it. Well, I have no criticism at all of this method, as far as I understand, or the result at the moment. So, the Hartree approximation in the given setting or something, your setting, how we live it, of course, neither for classical system nor the for quantum system. I mean, starting defined correlation functions, we know the exact equation for the classical system is exact equation. For the quantum system, they are different. But we know that half your approximation for both systems are the same, somewhere in between. Now you're saying that your type of you're saying it reproduces the classical system not very well, because then you can check this simulation, the classical system has been simulated, and you would suggest that it's nearer to the quantum system. The question is, of course, is that really true? I mean, that is the type of thing I cannot judge. I mean, there's a method, a priori, you do not know on which side it is neither the one nor the other, and now you're saying for the classical.
I think this classical equipartition that shows up in the end, that I said, according to the effective Hamiltonian, shows up on a much, much larger time scale than just a normal classical dynamic.
But then it would nevertheless get larger at the end.
Yeah, but of
it's just a question of the approximation. It can well be that the given approximation remains more or less close to quantum and goes classical at the end. It could also be that it remains classical at the beginning and goes quantum. Much later than the
So I would like to. I would like to indeed not concentrate so much on the thermalization. That's very different. I would like to see it more like this mean field is able to produce particles. So if you want to apply it to heavy ion collisions where you have sort of a rapid quench, if you then put your energy into the mean field, then the quench can then produce the particles, and with the Hartree you have the modes there, so you have the quantum particles coming out. Now maybe there is a way of analyzing purely classical simulations in a similar way, with coherent states or something, but I don't know that yet. Here I know at least I have the quantum formulation. It is put into a quantum world. I do have the renormalization all there, approximately, because in 3 plus 1 it's more difficult. And another thing I could put in is fermions. Have, say, you know, instead of the modes, I have the fermions. I have a similar thing, so I can produce fermions from a rapid quench at early times. I'm not thinking of the thermalization. We studied this a lot, and I talked a lot about it, but that's not the most important. Yeah, you can do that, but that's not what we want. We want to talk quantum. The initial condition for the modes have the vacuum fluctuations. You wouldn't think of that if you would have a purely classical simulation. Why would you put vacuum fluctuation into your classical field?
You can have Gaussian initial conditions and classical simulations, but quantum conditions are actually used by
I missed exactly what Christoph said because I had to slip out so I was trying to address on. But what would stop you, Jan, from initializing without all those halves? You know, you have quantum initial conditions because in your initial conditions you have all the halves from other initial codes. Suppose you didn't do that. Suppose you initialized with zeros instead of a half.
Well, then it would stay zero. Because F is zero, F dot is zero. Why would it start away from
that? If something other than a half.
What that guarantees is that the ultraviolet contagion is what is supposed to be in the quantum theory. So that you can, in principle, renormalize the theory. Okay? So you do not have that in the classical.
That's the only sense in which it's the sense in which it's quantum is that you started with 1/2, 1/2, 1/2, 1/2, 1/2.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I don't know how to do that in the classical. I mean, what Artur is doing, and so they take sort of an initial condition where the vacuum fluctuations are in the initial field, and then you have other problems. No, because I'm a beginner in the heavy iron. I know.
Yeah.
In my mind, what I would love to see at the end of this program is that we agree that the early stages will require some heavy numerical program going out of equilibrium physics to understand the fast variation in time. A very long time. There are fast cases and sort of coarse grain and average out, and there are very slow times. What we need to do is find the effective field theory for non-equilibrium to study the long time dynamics. So that program will actually involve, in the very early stages, determining the power spectrum, which is highly non-thermal, completely out of equilibrium, and some effective kinetic equation that is going to capture the long time dynamics without asking questions about the fast time scale, because there is lots of information there. If you're numerical, there is lots of information. But perhaps we don't do it. So I think that should be the focus of understanding that eventually should come out.
Sure, I mean, you can have field.
I just want to rerun the diagram.
You have fields, you have kinetics, and you have hydro, and then, you can glue it all together, but. You are now calling mean field large N. You're equating the two. Large N, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Integrate out all that other stuff, it won't just be this. This meaning what you guys are all been talking about.
Sure, yeah.
It'll be something much more complicated because you've integrated, you're talking about the tail and you've integrated out the dog now. I mean, I'm interested in the tail also, as you all know. I've written papers on the tail myself, but you've integrated out the dog in the sense of the energy. Most of the energy density is in the rows and all the higher mesons. You've integrated them out.
And the fermions.
And the fermions, right. So that's one question, is how different would how different is the real effective theory, meaning the one that you get along with figuring out the dog and looking at the tail, versus just simple scalar field theory? And the other question is, which nobody has really mentioned, is gauge theory. I mean, I guess my question to all of you is, what about gauge theory? If I ask, what would I love to see 3 months down the road at the end of this program, it's that the people who've been participating in this discussion include thinking about, you know, start projecting to the next meeting 2 years down the road, wherever it happens to be, with a goal of actually doing these kinds of things in gauge theory.
And of course, abelian theory has to start, but not the non-abelian case.
I would like to know the relevance of gauge theory to heavy ion collisions.
Well, I think that's a fair question. I think that it depends. The relevance of gauge theory to heavy ion collisions is in the initial condition.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but do you? Can we? How can we observe it?
Well, if you come next week,
I mean,
if
you're
if you were here on Tuesday, you would have heard Edward then.
I was, but.
And
sure.
Next week you'll hear from. I can't remember who's speaking. I think Raju is speaking as a representative of a large group of people who they are trying to answer that question by saying that essentially all observables in heavy ion collisions are controlled only by the initial state physics, which is a radical, in my view, radical and very disappointing possibility if true. But that's the philosophy of their approach is that none of the stuff that, there's no quark gluon plasma, there's no equilibration, everything just comes from the initial condition, so their answer would be it's all gauge theory.
Okay.
So this is the discussion we'll have over the coming weeks.
Can we thank Jan and continue the discussion for the long term?